You want to see something really scary? You bet.
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 87, featuring Ron, Igor Watt, Batmat Robotham, and Amanda Smith.
Letters. We get letters.
And it's time once again to dip into the Sarcastic Voyage mailbag.
And we got some questions here in a pile.
Pile of questions.
Question pile.
Hideous pile.
For years, they've answered your questions, comments, and beverage preferences.
Dear Sarcastic Voyage, Coke or Pepsi?
Again?
This December, Turnabout is fair play. Have you ever wanted to be asked a question by the Sarcastic Voyage crew? Well, you're in luck because they're doing just that. Simply send an email to podcast@algar.com with your name, contact info, and Clusterflonk2 in the message title, or call the show voicemail at 206-973-3982, and you'll be signed up for an actual personalized question to answer from Matt and Al. You lucky so-and-sos.
And now the adventures of Nick and Willikins.
Last time, you'll remember, something horrible happened.
Willikins?
Sir?
What is sex?
And now, the hopefully not too stirring conclusion.
People always seem to be going on about it, and I don't know where it is. I just feel like I ought to be included.
And your parents never explained the situation to you?
I was told it wasn't proper when I was a nipper. And of course both my family died under mysterious circumstances or something.
Sir, I really don't think that it's in my job description to,
Willikins. I recently asked you to give me a piggyback ride, and I told you to do it naked on account of how your butlering clothes was making you less aerodynamic. And then, when I wouldn't carry your clothes, I made you eat them. And when we got back to town, I made you buy new, finer clothes. And when you said you didn't have any money, I made you build yourself a press so as you could mint the coins yourself.
And I still find that less horrible than the prospect of the conversation that is to come, sir. Very well. When two beautiful bluebirds love one another very...
What, like ladybirds?
No, sir. Well, one of them is. Usually. Sometimes the two birds can be of a single gender, but really...
Two ladybirds of a single gender? What, like Siamese twins?
What? No.
Two sets of Siamese twins?
Look, we're getting off the topic. When a mama bear and a papa bear are in love...
So there's already a baby bear?
No, they're making a baby bear.
How?
Well, the mama bear and the papa bear have special parts.
What, like tools? Are they building the bear? Like that store at the mall?
That store at the mall is an incredible scandal. Over $100 and you stuff the bloody thing yourself. It's bloody ridiculous.
You get the baby bear at the mall? Do all babies come from the mall? What has this to do with sex?
No, sir, Look, when a group of badgers...
Why are you always talking about beasts?
So when two people, be they man or woman, love one another more than any person on the earth, they join together. The way they join can be very different, but if the people love one another enough, they will find a way. In most cases, this involves one member putting another of themselves in the body of another. And sometimes it can even result in a baby. But when it's done, it forms a connection more beautiful than anything else upon this planet. Sir? Sir?
Oh, I'm sorry, Willikins. I nodded off there. You're so boring. I missed all of that.
Very well. Shall we continue onward?
Of course we shall, Willikins. Do I have to tell you everything? Cool.
Are they done? Thank God. I had my head under a pillow and my fingers in my ears. Anyway, will Nick do that thing he talked about doing? Will Willikins help him? And what about that other guy from before? What's his deal? Find out next week on the thoroughly revolting adventures of Nick and Willikins. Panel discussion.
You know, just once, I'd like to open the show just without calling attention to the fact that I don't know how to open a show.
It's a shame that you've already done that, then.
I know. And then I thought maybe, well, we could do some kind of horror, like, ooh, spooky, very scary.
Eh. We'll have Marge Simpson come up and be all like, the following podcast is well, for we have, audiences.
Speaking of nagging horrible wives, we have brought Amanda along. So.
That's true. I'm here to ruin up this podcast.
Well, in truth, you are much more versed, much more familiar with the topic at hand. Topic, not theme, by the way. We don't do themes.
No, don't do themes anymore.
No. But we are talking in honor of the Halloween.
Yes.
Talking about horror. Of which I know little because I am not the man in this relationship.
Not even close.
No. So Amanda is here to tell us about a trip.
When we do a romantic comedy episode, you can be the boss of that.
You mean
and I will take that episode off.
You mean rom-com.
I do not.
Very well. Well, since you were obviously here for cynical reasons to plug your blog, let's get that out of the way up front here.
Well,
huh?
Let's plug my awesome, awesome blog. Me and Irene, noted vampirologist, and Shoeless T, noted barefoot person.
Noted barefoot boy crazy.
There's this barefoot boy enthusiast.
Yes.
We all write for a blog called Girl on Book Action, which now has awesome banner art.
Look at banner, Michael.
Yes, look at banner. It's at girlonbookaction.blogspot.com. We update it weekly. There's pictures, there's jokes.
Now, several times weekly, like you review usually a movie and then Irene will do like a book. And each one of those happens weekly. And then Shoeless T chimes in with her.
Yeah, Shoeless T reviews a boy once a month for us.
Because we are apparently sex objects to you. So.
Yes, you are.
That's great.
Thanks a heap.
Good for that.
Yeah, I'm not, I'm really feel no shame about that.
All those years of masculine marching, burning our underwear, led to nothing.
You know you're supposed to take it off first.
Don't tell me how to do it.
It sickens you? No, we actually bring that up not just for crass commercial reasons, although also that.
But those definitely.
Yeah, but because you frequently and Irene frequently are genre fans, you're definitely steeped in the horror and quite a lot of the things you guys review pertain to the subject at hand.
And typically when we do, like once a month, we do a duo review where I'll review the movie of a book and she'll review the book of a book. And usually that'll be a horror movie. In fact, usually it'll be a horror movie specifically about vampires.
Well, I imagine you guys try to do like what Matt and I try to do, which is talk about things where you both have an interest in it. And, you know, the Venn diagram of you and Irene, basically, I'm imagining horror is mostly it.
And we both like literature, but nobody really wants to read reviews about that.
Oh, sorry, what?
Exactly.
Books.
Books.
All right, so...
What you reading for?
On to the topic in hand.
Yes.
Horror. And again, this is something you guys are way more into than I am. I'll give Amanda a lot of... Well, yeah, and I'll give Amanda a lot of credit because when we started dating a million years ago... I told her, look, I don't dislike horror. I've just seen so much bad horror. I don't know where to start. And she gave me a nice, like, tutorial, a nice, like, here, watch this. And she kind of got me into it, which was cool.
Well, I mean, that's the problem with the genre as a whole, is that it's one of those ones where the stuff in it that's good is excellent. The stuff in it that is not good is awful.
Yeah, well, it's just like sci-fi. I mean, if you want to get someone into sci-fi who's never really seen it before, you really need to proceed carefully. You need to say, here's the really good stuff. You know, don't just watch any old thing that's an Aliens ripoff. You have to see this and you have to see this. And
you can't really get away from Alien ripoffs at this point. That's not even, it's not even a ripoff anymore if it's an Aliens ripoff.
No, it's a genre at this point.
I suppose that's true. There's like whole sections in Netflix. Like, you seem to like mind-bending comedies and Alien ripoffs. But actually, that's a good place to start. I didn't intentionally do that, but it works nicely. Because to me,
perhaps you'd enjoy Alien versus Hunt Guy.
Perhaps I would not.
Perhaps you'd enjoy this segue.
You look like you're fighting dragons in the future. And then he drives off
you
a
look
cliff.
Like you look like you're falling off cliffs, yeah.
Cut to Matt laughing for 20 minutes again. One of my favorite Matt reactions was when I told him that breaking news about Segway guy. Which in itself was horrible, but not what we're talking about.
What about the koala-loving dog?
No, that's just hard-hitting journalism there.
Yeah, we're all fascinated by the koala-loving dog, Amanda.
Who isn't, really? So yeah, Ridley Scott's, 78, 79, something like that.
I think it was 79, yeah.
Something like that. After Star Wars, where they decided, okay, everything in space, go. But really, that's sort of the where I started, like being a sci-fi fan. It's like, you know, this is pretty cool. It's dark. It's scary. It's got people being chased around, but it's got spaceships too. And that kind of whet my appetite. And to this day, I would say that's still my favorite horror movie, if it even counts.
It does. And there's a lot of crossover between horror and sci-fi. Most of it substantially less successful.
Well, most of it, as we said,
alien movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's some kind of weird gooey monster that hides in the air ducts.
And you can barely see it. And so on. Yeah.
No, it's a pitch dark ripoff, right?
Was that the thing?
Pitch black.
Is that guy? That guy?
Noted Dungeons and Dragons enthusiast?
Yes. I love the... this is not in great taste, but I love the rumor that he's gay. That just makes me laugh.
I have this great Photoshop, and it's seamless of Vin Diesel's head. This very gay posed body, and it's amazing. Mind you, I feel bad making fun of him after seeing him in the interviews for the Iron Giant.
Yeah, he didn't seem to really get some of the subtext. The 8-year-old kid did, and Vin Diesel not so much.
I played the robot.
So yeah, but Alien definitely way up there for me. My problem is because I am kind of not familiar with what counts. Is I don't know what horror movies that I like actually count as horror movies.
And then we make fun of you for not knowing.
Yeah, exactly.
We call you a little girl and make you wear pigtails.
Yeah, well,
it's the only way you'll know.
But I look good in pigtails. I mean, to my credit.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, as long as people don't call me Wendy, it's fine.
And they do.
Yeah, unfortunately. But for instance, Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, is that a horror movie?
That is really more of a thriller.
Yeah, thriller.
But how would you draw the distinction between that and, say, Friday the 13th? I mean,
that's the thing. Horror movies are like pornography.
Well.
And usually a horror movie will have some element of the supernatural.
But it doesn't have to.
No, it doesn't.
Usually it will.
By sequel 3, it will anyway.
Yeah.
What about Misery? Is that a horror movie?
No, that's, again, thriller. I think that's a
definitely
suspense
a thriller.
Movie.
But yeah. See, now that's one of the scariest movies I've ever seen.
Well, I mean, you can have a scary suspense movie. That's the point.
Okay, but Stephen King wrote that, and there's violence in it, and there's a horrible killer.
Yeah, but Stephen King doesn't just write horror.
Well, this is true. I don't know what he writes now.
I just think he does.
Well, very well.
Right now he writes about old people retiring to the beach.
Well, write what you know, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
And people getting hit by vans.
That's why I don't care what he does anymore.
He's got 7 or 8 books about people getting hit by vans.
Ugh.
Yeah. No,
and then he's not himself being hit by a van.
Right. No, I think the line is weird. And then again, there's that whole weird, like, you guys, when we went to go see Zombieland, there was this whole debate about fast zombies, slow zombies. Like, that's not what zombies are really like. Like, what do you mean what they're really like? It's made up. There's just weird rules about horror that I don't get at all. It's like when Irene, and I respect her tremendously, she's studying this stuff, you know, for an advanced degree. But when she says this is vampires and this isn't, well, how do you know? They're not, you know, real.
You just know.
Yeah, you can feel it. All right.
With zombies, it's what George Romero told us.
Well, very well. Okay, you guys school me then. I'm done with my little spiel. You guys tell me what I need to know about horror.
So many things.
Start.
No, despite the rather ridiculous nerd debate about fast zombies, slow zombies, I think that really we all have enough room in all of our hearts to accept all zombies.
Yeah. Well, every movie now has zombies in it, so there is that.
There is.
By law, there's like a 75% zombie saturation, you know, mandatory.
Listen, when Spock is fighting zombies, I think we're at the point where it's getting kind of ridiculous.
Oh, no, Spock and Optimus Prime and Venkman and Snake Eyes.
Yeah, but of all of those, Spock seems the most strange to me somehow.
Well, Optimus Prime was a zombie for a while there, was he not?
First episode, yes. I don't know, the whole, like, distinction between zombies, like, people say, oh, this isn't a real zombie movie because they act this way. Well, they're not real. You know that, right?
Now that's dumb. Because, I mean, you know, 28 Days Later was a great zombie movie with running zombies.
And then 28 Weeks Later was not a great zombie movie.
But still had running zombies. So you just can't tell.
Well, I would assume that horror movies fall under the same rule as every other kind of movie, which is, generally speaking, there are exceptions, but generally speaking, sequels are sort of a diminishing returns thing. Each time you go back to the well, yeah, it's less good.
Well, and by the time you get to 38, you're really in trouble. Well, or possibly the guy just goes into space.
Like the leprechaun.
But then he comes back from space to go to the hood, because that's more exotic.
That's the natural progression.
Sure.
Well, Ireland to space to the hood.
That makes sense to me. Now, the whole
it's written
zombie
down in
thing.
That hero's journey book.
Hey, I have that, the Joseph Campbell thing. It's an archetype of all cultures to the hood. It's actually in Beowulf.
Yeah, exactly. Remember that time when Beowulf went to the hood?
He does that right before he fights the dragon.
Right. So really, though, the zombie thing.
Yo, he said, this dragon is whack.
And then, then you've got like movies like The Crazies, which is by Romero. It's the original one, not the one that just came out. It's by Romero. It's about people going nuts and killing other people and being sort of senseless, but those people are still alive and affected by some kind of plague. So, you know,
so are they zombies?
Zombie movie?
There you go. Technically a zombie movie.
Well, but yeah. I thought zombies were actually supposed to be like some kind of, what is it, like Haitian curse?
Well, yeah, originally.
Okay, yeah. But where do you draw the line? If that's canon, if you're really going to hold them to rules.
At the end of the day, it's just, is this a good story or not? I mean, yeah, you can take the sort of basis from...
Matt, this is me and you and Amanda talking. We all think that. But the larger community of nerds does not care if it's a good story or not. They care about nitpicky rules.
Yeah, that's why their opinion is dumb.
Very well. It's just, I mean, the zombie thing seems a bit played out now. Like, I'm really looking forward to the Walking Dead show that's coming up on AMC. AMC is really on a roll. I mean, Breaking Bad is an awesome show. Mad Men is an awesome show. I hear good things about that other show they have that the name completely escapes me. And Walking Dead, great comic. I'm really looking forward to seeing it on.
I'm looking forward to seeing it in real life so that I can tell the characters apart.
That is a problem.
Some of the sketchy black and white art in the comic does.
At least Betty and Veronica had different colored hair.
I've been reading that book since issue one, and I still can't name the entire cast.
No, but on TV.
And everyone's a sheriff. They're all wearing that outfit.
Yeah, there is a bit of that. I think on the TV, we're going to have an easier time of it. We'll see. I just hope people care. Like, I hope the zombie thing isn't so saturated now that show doesn't get a proper chance, because I assume at some point people are just going to say enough. Regardless of what you guys think as hardcore genre fans, you're just gonna, you know, the mainstream public is just going to get sick of this crap.
Well, I mean, it's like everything. It'll go for a while and then it'll stop and then it'll come back.
We've been through this before. We've been through this with just about all the different monsters. They get really big for a while and they go away. Like we had the vampire thing was huge and that got played out. And now it, like with the Anne Rice stuff, and now it's come back with the Twilight stuff, whether you like it or don't like it. And it happened with the very specific Japanese ghost children.
Uh-huh. Well, there was
strangely
that whole
specific.
There was that whole subgenre of ghosts on the internet. I know that.
It was the 90s Scream ripoff movies.
Yeah, no. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't Scream meant to be sort of an ironic fourth wall kind of wink, wink at slasher movies?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I liked
Scream. It sort of became what it was making fun of, though, is the thing.
That's what it sounds like. And it also sounds like by imitating that, you're missing the whole point.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the people who imitated Watchmen, because when you're deconstructing something and you just duplicate it on the surface, you're missing the whole point. Mm-hmm. Not to give Scream, you know, tremendous amount of, like, intellectual credit, but really, if it's effectively a parody, then copying it really doesn't do it justice.
Not really. The thing was that they weren't parodying, like, the actual subject. They were just parodying the sort of style of it. Like, they were all shot very much the same, using actors that all looked very much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Using the same, like badly dressed killer. Oh, this guy's dressed as an Eskimo. That was the killer in Urban Legend.
Ah. Well, see, there's, like the Simon Pegg show, Spaced, was actually shot a lot of times like a horror film. Like, it was a sitcom.
Oh, yeah.
But they shot it like a horror film, and that extra bit of style really kind of pushed it in a weird new direction, and it's kind of a cool thing to see people taking bits and pieces from the genre without really, like, there was nothing really horrific about it. It was a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept expecting something really bad to happen, but nothing bad ever really happened.
No, those guys did all right for themselves, actually.
It's just nerds playing around and trying something new. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But again, that's about as close to a horror thing as I've watched on a regular basis. So, you know.
So sad for you.
Well,
we watched most of the Master of Horror, like, as it came out.
That's true. And going back to you sort of indoctrinating me to the genre, I mean, you started one of our first dates. We dated long distance, so we didn't see each other a lot. But one of the first sort of weekends we spent together, you sat me down and made me watch all the Evil Dead movies.
The Evil Dead date.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good date.
I've heard that as a classic, and I'd never seen them before. I never knew what the big deal about Bruce Campbell was. It's like, this guy seems cheesy and dumb. And
no, the deal is that he's awesome.
Yeah, but name movies apart from Evil Dead and Bubba Hotep that he's been in that are good.
I refuse.
Yeah. No, I think we're done here.
Yeah. That's the thing. I see where he's awesome, and I'm not denying that.
His book that he wrote.
Yes.
No, I said movies.
The movie of his book.
Yeah, the book that he wrote about a career in bad movies. That sort of feeds on itself there. Where he basically realized his career was a joke and made money on it. Good for him.
He was great in that cameo in Spider-Man 2.
No, that doesn't count. He's great in all his Spider-Man cameos. No, he's one of those cult figures where he's been in a lot of stuff, and I didn't see it until we saw Evil Dead. I was like, okay, I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bubba Hotep, which was actually a good movie.
I feel sort of bad for Bruce Campbell, because if he'd come along now, he could enjoy the same sort of level of cult fame that, say, Nathan Fillion does.
Oh, Nathan Fillion is totally Bruce Campbell 2.0.
He can pay his rent, and he has his own keys and credit cards.
You know, the rent is too damn high. That joke is probably long outdated by the time people hear this, but I don't care. I want to go as the rent is too damn high guy for Halloween.
Put some blackface on.
Oh, boy.
That seems classy.
So, anyway.
Moving on.
Yeah. So, horror movies.
Yeah.
No, the Masters of Horror was sort of the next step that we moved into. And like any anthology series, some of it was great, some of it was terrible. But it's a nice sort of sampler platter. Like, there's a lot of different directors. And if you like one of the shorts, one of the hour-long things, you can go watch that guy's stuff. And, you know, it's like reading a good short story collection.
No.
You get a sense of what you like. And that did help. And I was reminded how much I love Joe Dante, who did some horror, but mostly sort of horror comedy. Like Gremlins was his, which I thought was great. And I don't think it really counts as a horror, but there were horror elements to it.
The Burbs.
Yeah. Did he do The Burbs? Yeah, I suppose he did.
Yeah.
He did Inner Space, which is the only good, the only movie that I'll say anything good about that had Martin Short in it.
It did have a tiny Dennis Quaid, though.
This is true. But there were a lot of other good directors, good different people represented. And then a lot of weird failures. Like, was it John Carpenter who did some fine horror movies?
Oh, John Carpenter.
He just fell on his ass doing his Masters of Horror. He's
old and sad now, just like Romero. And everything he does is sad and pathetic and sucky.
Well, that's
like Romero and Wes Craven both, actually.
That seems to happen a lot overall, like where a director has a great early career and then loses that spark and, you know.
And it was weird because the two Master Horror that John Carpenter did, they were bad in really different ways. Like one of them was really blatant and
heavy-handed sort of political commentary.
And then about abortion. And then the other one was really art faggy. And it didn't really go anywhere, and it was just super stylistic, and there wasn't a lot of meat there. So there was too much meat or not enough meat on his hands.
But, I mean, overall, there were a lot of really good stories and a lot of really interesting things done in that show. And I'm really surprised that show didn't get the respect that it should. It was, overall, like I would say 80% of them were worth watching in some way.
Oh, yeah.
Very different.
Even the failures had some really interesting stuff in them.
Well, there was that Lovecraft adaptation, for instance.
The Dreams of the Witch
Dreams
House.
Dreams of the Witch
one?
House.
Yeah, where the sinister angles.
Yeah, angles are scary.
They're not scary.
A lot of it doesn't translate very well from sort of the ambiance-laden book.
I've read some, like I've read some for Lovecraft. I've read enough that I'm familiar with the guy. I'm not the fan that you guys are, especially that Matt is. But I've read
That's
enough,
true.
And I know what's going on there. And there is some creepiness, and yeah, a lot of it's sort of in the narrative.
Staring at a corner doesn't really make good film drama.
No,
I get what he's going for, but it's hard to show that sort of thing.
Yeah, although oddly enough, Darkest of the Hillside Thickets, the Canadian indie band that does songs about Lovecraft, seems to get the point across.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they're
that's because they're awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
First band I ever saw live.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I still to this day enjoy their Shadow Out of Tim album. And I kind of don't want to read the Lovecraft story because I'm worried it's going to spoil the album for me.
Damn it, Lovecraft.
But I do enjoy those. I mean, they are old-timey in a way. Like, there's a bit of racism in there, and there's a bit of...
Yeah, well...
A lot of racism.
Lovecraft had some problems with a lot of people.
He seemed to be pro-eugenics, for instance.
Yep. You know how well that worked out.
Anti-woman.
Lovecraft.
He was afraid of women. He was so afraid of women.
Yeah.
And then there's just some of the outdated language. Like, everything's queer.
Yep.
Just like...
It was queer and eldritch.
Yeah.
It is ejaculated queerly.
And cyclopean.
And ineffable. That's his great, like, instead of describing something, he just says, it's undescribable. Moving on. That feels like a bit of a cop-out.
Howard, you don't really describe any of the things that you're talking about. That's because they're ineffable. Ineffable!
That makes them even scarier. You can't conceive of them.
I just picture going, woo, a lot.
What was nice when we played some Call of Cthulhu, Matt would run the games.
The tabletop RPG?
Yes.
Everything was effable. He always effed everything that we were fighting.
Well, who doesn't love a good F, really?
This is effing ridiculous.
Effing ponderous, man. Now that we're on the subject of Lovecraft, really, I enjoy it. I'm certainly not going to naysay, but... you guys should talk about it. What's great about it? Like, why do you love it so much?
I just think he has some really kick-ass monsters.
Okay. Yep. He's some of the best early-ish, like, Western monster literature.
Yep. And he has, like, this, like, his universe, his view of the universe is just really bleak in a way that I like a lot. Where it's just like, it doesn't matter what you do or your friends do or what anyone does, because you're a little fraction of dust in the eye of a giant monster that takes up the universe.
See, I enjoy bleak. I really like bleak. And I like, of the stories that I've read so far, I've really enjoyed that. What I don't like is the weird way that you're never connected to who's telling the story. It's always like the uncle of the brother of the guy this happened to. And
well, that's because everyone else is dead.
No, I understand that. But come on, a little dramatic license. Just make it first person and then the guy dies. Like, it doesn't have to be his found journal or whatever. Like, I don't. It takes me out of the action. It makes me feel like it doesn't matter when I have no stake in the characters because I know they're dead already.
Listen, I will be the first person to say that Lovecraft's writing is not perfect. That kind of crap comes up a lot.
So he's more of an idea man.
Yeah, I would say that's true, yeah.
It's kind of like the George Lucas thing, where he came up with some really great ideas, but really, he shouldn't be involved in the actual writing of it.
Where Star Wars is awesome, as long as he's not personally involved with it.
Right, but it is his idea, and it is his concept, but then just step away, like do an outline and go away.
Well, and that's why I like a lot of the fiction that's been inspired by him, too. Like, the guy, he did a writing circle with a bunch of other sort of famous horror and sci-fi writers back then too. Like Robert Bloch when he was very young. Mm-hmm. God, who else?
And even some of the modern stuff, that's been Lovecraft inspired. Some of it's just lame, like just copying Lovecraft. But then you've got like Neil Gaiman.
Well, there was that collection of Lovecraft inspired short stories that you guys all raved about and passed around between yourselves.
Yep.
Yeah, it was edited by Ellen Datlow. Mm-hmm. And if you go to girlonbookaction.blogspot.com, you will actually find that Irene has a review of it up. Because
what's that name again? And,
you know,
I forgot.
because it's really probably the best short story collection that I've read in the last couple of years. Yeah, it was really, really
good. And if you want a good sampler of like, okay, well, maybe I'm not into Lovecraft stuff specifically, but I like his ideas. Here's a great collection of a lot of different people playing in that world and you know, doing something different with his stuff.
I would also recommend Tales of Horror and the Macabre, which is the best of H.P. Lovecraft and has all his really good stuff in it.
I have a great, and I don't know where it came from because I may or may not have scored it through illegitimate means, but I'm sure I paid for it because I pay for things. There's great different short stories read by this. He makes Dave sound like Tiny Tim.
The Dunwich Horror by H.P. Lovecraft. Read by Wayne June. Gorgons and Hydras and Chimeras. Dire stories of Celino and the Harpies may reproduce themselves in the brain of superstition, but they were there before.
Really fantastic, yeah.
As read by Darth Vader.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's deeper than Darth Vader. It really is. I'll see if I can throw a sample in here, because the guy's voice is fucking awesome.
Why is James Earl Jones mad at me?
It's ineffable. All right, so what else is there really? Like, if I wanted to watch some more horror stuff, what should I watch? Like, what's good?
Let's go to the list.
Well, my favorite horror is probably, I'd have to say The Stepford Wives. It's the original, not the new one. I don't even know why. Why should I even be saying that? But
that movie did have Walken in it.
It did, but it was just sort of goofy.
Isn't The Stepford Wives one of those sort of like satire concepts? Like,
yeah, but it was also creepy.
It was creepy. It wasn't like normally I prefer more monsters and violence in my horror. Like this one was more of it was more cerebral. It's a really slow burn to get to what's going on, but there's that that real intense, creepy, oppressive atmosphere, and it's shot in that sort of 70s kind of grainy, so it looks more like it's something that's really happening style. Well, and everyone who's
kind of ill,
yeah, and everyone who's in it looks like a person, not like not like a crazy movie star. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, this is happening. Why is this happening? This could happen to me.
Wait, but it's done in like pseudo documentary style. Haven't you complained about that sort of repeatedly?
No, it's not. It's not like that. It the look of it is.
Yeah, it's not like handheld camera-y. It's just sort of older movies. The film has sort of a grain that just is. It's just there.
Yeah, that's definitely that's. I definitely find that to be true. I should go on record as saying, speaking of sort of classic back in the day horror movies, I thought The Exorcist was incredibly stupid and not in the least bit scary. I watched that and it's like, really? It's a little girl saying, lick me for 2 hours? Like, it didn't do anything for me at all. And people thought I was crazy, but I don't see it. What is scary about The Exorcist?
The Exorcist isn't one of my favorites. It's okay. There's stuff about it that I like.
I'm just thinking like grainy 70s, you know, like classic horror. And just, you know, I just tried. I really tried, but.
You needed a guide. You can't just go into this blind, man.
That's a problem, though, because The Exorcist is always like number one on those lists of scariest movies ever.
Yeah, those people are wrong. It's the same with Poltergeist. Poltergeist isn't scary.
Poltergeist has one scary clown.
Poltergeist is scary for me because we went to see that at the drive-in the night before my first day of second grade. You know,
you'll sleep well tonight.
Yeah, exactly. The TV people. So,
and the tree.
I'll never watch it again because I know it's not going to stand up. But my memory of it is utter horror.
Just as the most terrifying thing ever.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, speaking of movies that I remember well, and then we go back to them. Amanda had never seen They Live.
Ooh.
Which is nice sci-fi horror thing. John Carpenter.
Yep.
Like, okay, well, she's a John Carpenter fan, and she has this look that she gives me that, well, you must have really liked this in the 80s, but this sure sucks. It's a very specific look, but that's the look that I got.
That's when you talk about Chevy Chase. Same look.
Fletch was good, damn it. In any case, we watched it, and no, it did not hold up. There's a kernel of a good idea in there, but it's so padded.
Come on, dude. 12-minute fight scene over sunglasses. Who doesn't want to see that?
Everyone.
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Hey, there will be no wrestling on this show, okay?
Oh.
Yeah, as soon as you said that, like, Sioko and Brewtown are like, yes, now you should talk about the beef jerky guy and the muscly gay guy and the other muscly gay guy and the mullet guy. No. No wrestling.
Go find a wrestling podcast.
Yes, surely they exist.
That sounds like it'd be a really yelly sort of podcast.
Yeah,
exactly. I think we should start a feud with a wrestling podcast.
We should start some kind of a feud with a podcast. That would be fun.
I thought you guys had already started a feud with the Chuck and Mal podcast, sending them all of your, like...
No.
All of your people.
No, that's cross-pollination. We get some of their people, they get some of our people. We have overlapping audience. That's not exactly the same as a feud.
But you sent them your flonk.
What, you mean flonk?
Yes.
Look, he's not our flonk, okay?
I don't know, man. I think
if he was ours, he'd do what we told him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's simply not true.
Anyway, they live. A couple of good moments. It really should have just been like a 30-minute Twilight Zone episode, though.
Yeah.
Did not really stand up very well.
Ooh, consume.
That was the great thing about Master of Horror was that if you had an hour-long idea, then it was, you know, you just been there. It didn't have to have that half hour of teen drama before you got to the horror.
This is true. I remember, you know, back in the day, I watched a lot of the Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Halloween, all that crap, just because I was a teenager and that's what you did.
That's the thing you did.
Yeah. But I would never want to watch any of those now because I know they were freaking cookie cutter. Just here's a wacky way to kill guys.
Well, except for Nightmare, which was awesome.
Maybe the first one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Those turned into ridiculous cartoons. No, I'm saying, like, every year we went to watch the new Nightmare on Elm Street. We went to watch the new Friday the 13th, the new Halloween.
Yep.
They were all exactly the same.
Yep. It's like now with Saw and Final Destination, except that those are bad.
Well, these were bad, too, but they were fun.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I hate torture porn.
Okay. What? I can pretty much guess, but tell me, what is torture porn? I hear that thrown around all the time.
Oh, it's just these horror movies where you don't like any of the characters. You spend a half hour sort of getting to know that you don't really care for them, but you're supposed to believe that you like them. And then something bad happens to them. Someone traps them in a house. Someone sets them up to like a Seven-style death sequence.
Yeah.
And you just watch them get mutilated to death for an hour and a half.
There's nothing there except... You know, it's just people getting killed, you know?
Okay, so where's the porn part coming out? That's where you're losing me.
There's usually some tits, and if there's not tits, there's sexual exploitation. Uh-huh. And even if there's not that, it's just you get the feeling that it's really sort of masturbatory violence.
Yeah, just violence for the sake of violence.
Ah.
You know, it's just like, let's see how gross this is. We'll burn this chick's eye out with a hot poker.
Well... And I suppose this would be as good a point as any to seg into our discussion.
I don't want to.
here comes the disclaimer now.
A discussion of the movie The Human Centipede follows and will last exactly 10 minutes. For those of you who may find this subject unpleasant, and that should be all of you, we ask you to skip your players ahead 10 minutes after the tone.
Beep! All right, guys, we have 10 minutes to discuss The Human Centipede. We watched this movie. Amanda and I watched the first hour of it. We got to a certain point and I said, no, this is enough. And I skipped to the end. Matt actually stuck it through the entire movie.
Yep. Cause I'm a professional, damn it.
Apparently you are. Not only that, but you were sick.
Yeah.
Which,
I was sick and the copy I had, the dub was off by about 3 seconds.
Well, you know, the vital dialogue.
Well, yes. It would have been a shame if I missed out on some of the
muffled crying for an hour. Just muffled crying.
Ranting in German.
That part was fine. That guy was nice and creepy, but the rest of it, ugh. we got to the point where he's got them hooked up ass to mouth.
Uh-huh.
And the front guy is eating. I was like, okay, what's going to happen next is we're going to see the poop going through. I've had enough.
Yeah.
Did I miss a poop scene? Is that what happened next?
No, actually, they never... I mean, see, like, some... I'm going to get a little graphic here. You get some rather nasty swallowing sound effects, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, once you get over that, nothing there.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, we watched this, and there was 10 minutes of what you were just saying, like, getting to know the main characters, and I hated them both.
Oh, my God.
And, you know...
Two of the stupidest bitches in all of horror.
Yeah.
And that is saying something.
I feel the same way, and we don't throw that around lightly. Like, I would not say that we are, you know, misogynists or anything like that. Like, I don't wish harm.
Oh, I'm gonna say you're misogynist now.
No, you called them stupid bitches as well.
It's okay when I do it.
Yeah, well, all right. No, this had nothing to do with, you know, if they were two dudes who were just as, like, shallow and vacuous, I would wish the same thing.
That's what happened
them.
In Hostel.
Yep.
Just this dude wanted to sew people together. That was it. That was the entire thing. Matt, in the missing 20 minutes that we didn't see, do they explain why?
Nope.
Okay. See, that,
I still think
that
it's a sexual thing, but that's just me.
It seems to me like that would be where the horror lay, is finding out why this guy...
his twisted motivation.
Yeah.
Matt, we had this discussion before where you think it's a sexual thing. Is there anything else in that movie that is not overtly stated in giant 72-point font?
Nope.
So if it were sexual, I'm pretty sure he would just pull out his dick. You know what I mean? Like, there's that movie is not afraid to tell you exactly what it thinks. So if it were sexual, it would say, look, it's sexual, and it didn't.
And now here is my dick.
My Schwanz.
What it thinks is that it likes to hear whimpering, muffled cries.
Crying. An hour of muffled crying.
I still got to hand it to Tom Six, though. He managed to make a studio pay for his fetish.
And the sequel has been greenlit.
Yep.
Full. What is it? Human Centipede full sequence.
Yeah.
Which is, what, 6 or 8 of them? Same thing. Doing the exact same movie, only, you know, with more people.
Well, listen, it's he'd originally envisioned it as a trilogy, but he wanted to make the first one to prove that he could.
But really, if you're doing
And then he could elaborate on the story with 2 and 3.
If you're doing a centipede, really, shouldn't it be 100? Or at least 50?
Two ends with the revelation that one of the people is his father.
And then the big advance in 3 is that it becomes a Ouroboros and the head is joined to the tail.
We were watching this, and I'm like, okay, this is going to be torture porn. Fine. We're watching, and I'm like, this needs... I don't say this very often, but this movie really needs a more Japanese influence. Those guys can do torture porn like nobody's business. Like The Audition, I can't think of another one off the top of my head. Like that type of movie.
Well, you said. I wish this had more Japanese influence. And then as if having your wish granted by a jerk genie who takes you literally, an Asian dude shows up.
And I was so mad.
That's not what I meant.
I felt like the movie was sassing me back and there was nothing I could do about it.
And Matt said he thought the dude was Korean, but nevertheless, there was an Asian dude not speaking English. And that's the best.
I think I might have read that in the Wikipedia entry or something. The point is,
Wikipedia says.
Well, I needed to do some research for this. I needed to do research to figure out what the hell was going on at the end. Because at the end, everyone starts talking. The two people who speak English, whose mouths are otherwise occupied. So the rest of the characters spend the entire movie speaking in either German or Korean, I think, with no subtitles.
Yeah. Not
so
great.
Two dudes who look the same show up and people get shot and it's a whole thing. I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
And they do this thing, spoiler alert, at the end where the front and the back have died and the middle is still alive.
Listen to her muffled cries for another like 15 minutes.
For the entirety of the credits.
Yeah. Muffled cries, the movie. But I mean, there's bits, Adrian actually pointed this out. I don't want to take credit for this. Just how blatantly awful the dialogue is. Like, I would now administer the rape drug.
I am now giving you the rape drug.
And the fact that he had a tombstone for his first experiment on his Rottweiler.
Oh, that's what that was.
Three
okay.
dog. Yeah, it was, what is it? Three Hund.
Three dog.
Which I don't know, you know, I don't know much German, but I'm pretty sure Hund is dog. And I'm pretty sure he called the dog Three Dog. Really? You didn't even get a little clever and call it like Cerberus or something?
Nope.
Cerberus.
Three dog. Which, okay.
Cerberus is the three-headed dog. Cerberus is the aardvark, right?
Yes.
Okay. I confuse those. Yeah, but no, three dog. And the guy just like, he's really into this and he just wants to make this human centipede and that's it. That's all there is to it.
And he looked a bit like if you crossed Christopher Walken with Tommy Wiseau.
That's who it was. I knew you had another. Matt and I both said, Christopher Walken, and I knew you had a good other person, and I couldn't remember.
He's got Tommy Wiseau's pockmarks and sort of greasy, general greasiness. Because Christopher Walken
three
doesn't.
Dog.
So I guess they went to Germany and had a child together.
Like you do.
Yeah, you know. Two men can have children, have right?
This we're Tommy Wiseau.
We're living in the future.
I suppose we are.
Don't discriminate.
But, hi, sir. I'm Nero.
Nice. But yeah, we watched this thing and it just, I wasn't scared. I wasn't really disgusted except for like the needle stuff, which Amanda and I both sort of turned our heads because that's a thing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't bad enough for us to mock. Like I pictured, okay, we're going to sit down and watch this and we'll just MST it. We'll just yell funny stuff at the screen the whole time. No, couldn't do that. It wasn't bad enough for that.
It was just boring.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of running around the house. Like once we get to the house with the hospital basement.
Hospital basement. I think that's the funniest observation we made.
Hospital basement.
Yep.
Yep.
We just watch them run around in the house and a whole happens. And then he threatens one of the girls with a tranquilizer gun. And I was really worried. He was shooting her in the head with the tranquilizer gun. And I don't like needles. And the idea of a needle gun petrifies. Yeah. But nothing comes of it.
No,
he just chases her around.
Yep.
So they didn't even really do torture porn because the surgery scene pretty brief, not particularly.
No, I assume the surgery scene was going to take forever.
Yeah, I mean, I figured we'd see a lot of cutting, a lot of blood, a lot of organs, and just the sewing, maybe. Nope. Mm-hmm. It was like a brief little montage.
Yep.
Gotta have a montage.
Even Rocky had a montage.
Yeah, it just, I mean, really, because the premise was so ridiculous, like, that's your promotion right there. Look how crazy this is. And when you're screaming, look at me, there really should be something to look at. And there just wasn't. It was just a pointless exercise in, I got this crazy idea. Let's do it. That's it.
Yeah. And then didn't go anywhere with it.
No. Muffled screaming, muffled crying.
Just a waste.
Yeah. Utter waste of ass to mouth.
Here's my question too. They're doing the sequel. Okay.
Yeah.
My question is, everyone in the first movie is dead.
Except the middle one.
Yeah, except the middle one. So, like, you're asking me to believe that somewhere out there is another crazy German guy who makes a beat. That's the most unbelievable part of this entire thing.
Yeah, someone picks up the plans and says, I will continue the work that this man started.
This is a great idea.
Yeah.
Of course. I'll make a three dog.
Awesome. Three dog night.
But no.
All right, that's time.
I will finish.
All right, that's time, guys. 10 minutes. We are done talking about the human centipede. Done.
Beep.
All right, that is time. 10 minutes talking about the human centipede. We are done, and let's never speak of it again. Yes, never again. All right, so really, you guys, tell me what I'm missing. Tell me what's good. Tell me what's out there that I'm... It's not all the human centipede, right? Like, there is good horror.
No, there's good stuff available to you.
Lots of good
you,
horror.
You, the man on the street.
Well, tell me.
Okay. My two favorite horror flicks alien movies are The Fly remake with Jeff Goldblum, which is fucking... Just, dude...
makes a teleporter. Teleporter makes him a fly, and you get to watch him fall apart for an hour and a half. It's great.
And then you make the penis just, in the medicine cabinet reference like you always
do. Yep, that happens.
Uh-huh.
See, and I just love it because it's not – there's no monster stock. Well, not until the end, but it's just this dude doing this thing to himself, and it's creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, he starts pulling his teeth and his fingernails out. And like, there's just this body horror thing that skews me right the fuck out. I love it.
And it's got that thing that Lovecraft does where it's just the dread. There's nothing you can do. There's just this intense, heavy dread. Go fuck yourself, audience. Too bad.
And just like this, what am I turning into? That's so creepy to me.
Yeah. And it's a nice just general sci-fi movie too, like you know, the standard classic Frankenstein, why did I fuck with nature thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a cliche if it's done badly, but if it's handled well, it still tells a great story.
No, it's so perfect in this. I love that flick. Oh, I have to go watch it later.
And what else?
And of course, Jaws.
Now, is that a horror movie? If Psycho and Misery are not horror movies, then how is Jaws a horror movie?
Jaws, a monster,
but it's a real life thing.
But it does.
I know, and that's real life. That's the reason. Can't. Cool, like Roar.
Yeah, like
technically
Roar.
that's Jaws 4, but
so it, Jaws counsels. Now you're really confusing.
He really is more of a monster than he is a real thing.
But sharks are real.
Yeah, but they don't usually get what is it? Feet long? Yes.
Yeah, he's huge.
Yeah, I think it's
also,
30 feet long.
The giant squid is real, and that is also a monster. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Kathy Bates is real, and she's a monster, too. I don't get how Misery's not a horror.
So is Kate Mulgrew.
Different. That's different. Let's not get into that. We got a podcast for that. Come on now. Focus. All right.
The monstrous Kate Mulgrew.
Let's really throw in your best, your favorite, your stuff.
So, like I said, Stepford-wise, probably my favorite. And looking over my list here, I realize that, like, my favorite horror is really kind of girly, which makes me a bit sad that I'm a cliche. But I'm a pretty big Lucky McGee fan, and he did May, which is creepy and not is another one of the slow burns. Not a whole lot happens up until the end, but you like the characters, so who cares? You're still enjoying yourself. That's the difference.
Well, we watched some of his.
Yep, his.
His Masters of Horror, and they were good.
Yeah, like Sick Girl.
Yeah, nice cutesy, horrific things at the same time. Like, walked a nice line of this cute lesbian couple with just awful, awful things happening. And
I like when the cute and the grotesque are really intertwined, so you can't
Yeah, that does seem to be your wheelhouse.
It is my wheelhouse.
What else is in your wheelhouse? Where I keep my wheels. In the house. your wheel hissy, if you will.
I will not.
Very well.
I will not. I also enjoyed Teeth quite a bit.
Which the movie about vagina dentata, which is what you think it is, a woman's anatomy with teeth.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the only horror that has elements of comedy in it that I really, really got into, because mostly I'm too stupid. I just can't enjoy both at the same time.
Yeah, see, I really enjoyed Shaun of the Dead and you didn't.
No, yeah.
I
did not.
I'm the only one.
Yeah, and you like those guys' things. Like, you liked Spaced, and you liked Hot Fuzz, but you just didn't like Shaun of the Dead.
It just, the emotional leaps just were too, it was too much going back and forth between funny and feeling bad for them. Couldn't do it.
That was my favorite parts of that movie.
Well, Teeth was a whole different feeling, though. And it felt sort of whimsical and like a you know, sort of a light story of a girl's, like, rite of passage and becoming a woman. And then, you know, her vagina was a monster. And there is a scene in there, and I won't spoil what actually happens, where something just utterly, just unimaginably awful, if you're a dude, and I think women could probably relate to it as well, happens. It's not just what you think. There's an extra element to it. And it happens so flippantly, so casually, like, oops.
Oh, well.
Yeah. And that made it so much scarier to me, because there wasn't crazy camera angles and lighting and mood music. It was just like an everyday thing that just happened. It's kind of like, oops, there I go into the wood chipper.
Whoopsie daisy.
Yeah, and that made it so much worse.
And that's one of the things that I like about a lot of the 70s horror movies is there's not a lot of buildup. Just something awful just happens, and then we're on to the next thing.
Yeah, really, does every horror movie have to have a big dramatic buildup where someone's walking around a corner and, oh, it's just the cat?
Yeah. Sometimes it actually is a monster.
Yeah, sometimes the cat is a monster.
Sometimes it came back.
Just
very well. A lot of history down that road.
And finally, the movie that I saw most recently that was quite a good horror was Dead Girl, and that was really visceral. Like it punched me in the guts, and it made me feel sick. And I thought about it for days and days later. And
your detailed feeling, a girl in book action.
.blogspot.com.
Correct. So I don't mean to rush you through here, but. You have talked about that in detail, and we do have some stuff to get to here. So if people want to read your specific thoughts on that, by all means, check out the blog.
Also, it includes some of Irene's cradle-robbing feelings.
Very nice. All right, well, we actually have some mail this week that relates to the topic at hand.
Ooh.
So let's jump to the voicemail here and check that out.
Hey, guys. It's Tidro. I heard you were doing a show about horror, so I wanted to call and ask you a question. The question is in two parts. Part one, is Stephen King still relevant to the genre today? And part two, when was the last time he wrote something or something of his was made into a movie that really scared you or creeped you out? And that's it. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you on Twitter. Bye.
All right. Well, this is why you might be like screaming at your iPod, like, why haven't you guys talked about Stephen King? That's why.
Shut up. That's why.
Obviously, I think most of us sort of came to horror type stuff in our teens reading his stuff. I mean, no doubt the guy is, you know, the most well-known, very prolific, you know, guy in the genre. And unlike a lot of the overhyped guys, he actually does have a lot of good stuff.
He also has a lot of stuff where the protagonist is a ridiculously heroic writer who's fighting against the odds and trying to write at the same time, and he
living
just
in Maine.
Want his kids back, and he's an alcoholic.
Yeah, but saying that,
who got run over by a van?
Yes. But saying that, The Dark Half was one of my absolute favorite books.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one.
In high school, I don't know if I'd love it now. I think Romero actually made the movie of that, which wasn't terrible. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
No.
But just the building on the whole duality of a writer, the fact that there's a different part of you that really channels the creative part, and there's the part of you that deals with the rest of the world, and putting a horror spin on that, I really enjoyed that. But yeah, you're right. The writer thing does get a bit repetitive after a while.
Yeah.
But her question really pertains, and I think Matt probably knows this better than any of us, his current stuff, his modern stuff, is he still relevant, she asked.
His most recent book, Under the Dome, was really good. I enjoyed it. It felt like him going back to sort of what he's good at, like, you know, like his big horror books. His last couple of books before that were boring as shit.
I liked The Cell. Ending was a good. bit of a letdown, but it was creepy, and it was one of the few times where that whole, ooh, the cell phone, is there something wrong with it? It's scary.
Where my cell phone didn't work.
Actually, was actually successful, and I think that might be the only time I've seen that happen.
Yeah. But other than that, like he, like I said before, he's done a lot of stuff about old people who are retired and sort of mystical things happen to them. And I just don't care. Well, and his books are too long for me to bother with anymore.
Well, I mean, hasn't he really, I mean, putting aside the obvious joke that everyone makes, hasn't he threatened to retire didn't he say he was going to stop writing horror?
Yeah, well, he said he was going to stop after we finished the Dark Tower books up.
Right.
But I get the feeling, and I've read a lot of interviews and stuff from him, he's one of those people who just sort of, like, can't stop writing. It's one of the reasons that there are, like, a billion books out by him.
Well, and you know, I can certainly respect that. I
mean, not all
more.
Of them are good, but... No,
but the guy, you know. I mean, sheer volume, there's going to be some good. Like,
yeah.
And his book on writing, a lot of people say this, and I will completely agree with that, is one of the best... just how do I write? What is the creative process? How do I get people to notice it? What, you know, editing, just so good. One of the best books on the subject I have ever read. And a lot of people will back me up on
that. And some of the things he says is just shut up and write, stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Which is important.
Yeah. But I mean, growing up, there were a lot of different, there were some good, there were some bad. I mean, movie wise, it's been a bit of a mixed bag, but some of the best horror movies I've seen, like at least growing up in the 80s and 90s, were based on Stephen King. I mean, Pet Sematary was great. And
oh, I love Pet Sematary.
Coming back to Misery, and whether or not it's horror, it still scared me.
Yep.
And
The Shining.
The Shining, which, yeah, okay, maybe it deviated from the book and they redid a TV movie, whatever, but the original Shining with Jack was great.
Yeah.
Regardless of how much or how little it resembled the source material.
And or how hideous his wife was.
More recently, The Mist. Was it The Mist?
Oh, yes. I love that. Was such a good movie.
Wasn't was it 1408? That wasn't bad either, right?
No, 1408 was the book really was bad. Like, the book really, I don't like to just say the
clear. Oh, no, but the book is bad. Usually better. But that's a fact.
The book had more ambiance than the movie really lacked in that.
That said, I will watch John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson for 2 hours doing whatever. And the script was good, so that helped.
Yeah.
Matt, anything?
I was going to say definitely The Mist.
Yeah.
Like with Thomas Jane. Trying to get his kids back.
Just trying to get my kids back.
Yeah.
Right.
What else? I think we've hit most of the really big, good ones.
I'm sure there's others, and I'm sure people are screaming that we missed some, and I'm sure we missed some, but...
A lot of people talk about how great the It miniseries was, but I could never sort of get into that one.
No, me neither. I could not buy Jack Tripper, TV's John Ritter, as one of the main guys, and Harry Anderson, the judge from Night Court.
You mean Dave Barry?
Yeah. It was just such a TV cast.
Yeah.
Also, Harry Anderson thinks that Pennywise the Clown would make a great band. All right. A couple of letters here on the topic as well. This is from Shauna. And she writes, Dear Al, Matt, and whomever may be joining them. That's you, dear.
Well, I think joining is rather strong.
I'm whomever.
Do you find horror movies disturbing or titillating? Me? I have M overactive imagination. So I have a hard time watching them without being up all night afterwards. TMI, since seeing Psycho as a young child, I'll still have trouble facing the shower head. I have to see the door. Don't make me mention It. After reading Silence of the Lambs, I had to have the light on for days. That's another one. Silence of the Lambs I think is scary, but I guess it doesn't count as horror.
Mm.
And this may horrify Matt, but my first major nightmare was the first time we saw Ghostbusters at our house. I was chased by the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Actually, she says Safety Puft Marshmallow Man.
Oh, I picture him having, like, safety pins in him now. I don't like that.
Like Hellraiser.
Yeah.
And could only be saved by reading the phone book to Jonathan Winters. Very well.
Oh, that is a little bit scary.
So can you tell of a time that a horror movie, book, novelty song gave you nightmares? Yours in Felt, Shauna Ziyoko and stuff. Well, like I mentioned, I did watch Poltergeist the day before the first day of second grade. So, yes, nightmares.
Mm-hmm. The Ghostbusters animated series used to give me nightmares as a little kid.
Well, there was some creepy stuff in there.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm still going to mock you for that, but really they did try to push the boundaries of what they could get away with on a kid's show.
Yep. The boogeyman on that show was so goddamn awesome.
Yeah.
With me, you name it, and I've had nightmares about it. I have an overactive imagination, and I have nightmares about whatever I'm doing that week, or awesome dreams. So I've had the Stepford Wives one. Dead Girl, I've been having Dead Girl nightmares the last little while. It just it soaks in. If the horror is good, it'll probably give me nightmares.
See, I don't really like anything I watch, like... I'm sad to say does not affect me that well. Even like the best horror, I'll be scared and then I'll forget about it. It just doesn't make that much of an impact for me. I just, I don't really get off on getting scared the way a lot of people do, which is probably why I'm not that into horror.
Yeah, see, I use it as a way of falling asleep some nights. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll occasionally get a 3 a.m. posting about whatever horrible thing I'm thinking about.
Those are my favorite posts.
Speaking of that, that's a great segue to Annie. Fan favorite Annie, Liz Ladner, has written to us specifically about a nighttime horror. I know she stays up late at night thinking about this. Pod question. Grinning Man, Murdering Moth Monster Man, or Friend to All the Children? Your answer will be the deciding factor whether I sleep this week or not. KK, thanks, Annie. Now she's...
I actually don't know a whole lot about the Grinning Man.
Nor do I, and I looked it up on Wikipedia, and Wikipedia somehow managed to give me several paragraphs without really telling me what it was.
It told you to watch Wikipedia the Mothman Prophecy, didn't it?
I don't want to watch the Mothman Prophecy.
Rightly
Nobody
so.
Wants to watch the Mothman Prophecy.
Nobody likes Milhouse. No, but the gist of it, and Matt, you're really the resident crypto, whatever the hell, crypto fascist.
Yeah.
So
From what I could see, it's a creepy smiling guy who shows up after people encounter the Mothman.
What is the Mothman? Pretend I know nothing about this.
Didn't we talk about the Mothman? The Mothman is like a man that's half
flies
moth.
Too close to your lights and eats your sweaters.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, scary.
Oh, so the Mothman must be dying out now because regular moths are dying out because of synthetic fabric.
That's what Stephen Fry told us.
30 years ago, lightning struck the Mothman that hasn't done since.
Yeah, the green, but he's some kind of an alien, isn't he? Mm.
Or a man in black.
Or yeah. Possibly that. So Johnny Cash is the Grinning Man?
That's right.
Yeah, or Will Smith.
He'll drag you into a burning ring of fire.
That is horrible. So, no, Annie, you're never going to sleep again.
No, but the Grinning Man is a really cool monster name.
That is a good point.
Also, some of the pictures I saw sort of look like a really good rendition of the Joker.
No, I think that was just the Google search that brought up the Grinning pictures Man, which is a different thing. Yeah.
Brought up pictures of the Joker. Pictures.
Yeah.
Right.
I saw a picture from the man who laughed, so that's probably what you saw.
Yeah. Next question comes from Sabrina, and she writes, "Hey, guys. As I am a fan of many different kinds of movies, horror movies being some of my favorites, I notice it can be broken down into so many subgenres. For example, foreign, B-movie, creature features, and your standard zombie, vampire, werewolf fare."
Warwolves.
I actually almost said warwolf, not, like, intended to. That's one of those things that's doomed forever.
A warwolf.
Which is your favorite subgenre? And if so, a movie or movies that you were liking to watch over and over? Sweet Nightmares, Sabrina. Good question.
Mm. Good sign-off, too.
Yeah. I would go with the sci-fi, like just because I'm such a sci-fi fan. I'll back Matt up on The Fly. I did enjoy that. Alien. Things that sort of combine something that I love and make it frightening. That's what I prefer.
I like the character piece satire ones. Well, I mean, I also like the big ridiculous monster ones. But when I'm not
ones
watching
that are
though,
making a statement on the human condition.
Yeah, ones that are
yeah.
I started out with Romero when he sort of like, malls are bad. And went from there.
Very well. Matt?
I just love monster movies. A good monster will save a shitty movie for me.
So like the old Universal, like the Wolfman meets the Frankenstein meets the Dracula?
Yeah, if the monster looks good enough.
Very well.
I will spend a lot of time just looking at a monster.
What about Benicio del Toro in Whiteface?
That was a big disappointment. I was really hoping that would be good and do well because then we could have more monster movies, but it did neither of those things.
Unfortunate. All right, unfortunately, we're hitting our time cap. We're going to have to wrap up here. Matt, I know you had a lot to say. I will give you the last couple of minutes here to frantically mention anything that you didn't get to mention.
Okay.
Choose well. Choose wisely.
Okay, remake of The Blob kicks ass. Much better than I would have anticipated. Very violent. The Thing kicks ass. Again, remake. Very good. Nice ending. Has Kurt Russell in it. Hellraiser. Hellraiser 2. Nothing after Hellraiser or Hellraiser 2. And the fact that they're remaking it with a PG-13 audience in mind is fucking retarded.
And that they had a script that Clive Barker was like, yeah, this is awesome. And they decided, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go with the guys who did what, Saw 4? Cinematic classic. Saw 4.
Ugh. Read Richard Matheson. He does I Am Legend, Hell House, and a great made-for-TV horror movie called Duel that was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Read Richard Matheson?
Did I say that?
You said Reed Richard Matheson, but it really? Came out as like Reed Richards.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Richards.
Madhouse by Richard Matheson is one of my favorite short story horrors.
Plus, oh, yeah. Matt, didn't we on our other podcast on the Post-Atomic Horror, our Star Trek review podcast, didn't his name come up as having written
yeah,
an episode?
Yeah, which did he do? Was it Turnabout Intruder?
No, it was an early one. It's one
or not Turnabout Intruder. Enemy Within.
Listen to the Post-Atomic Horror. It's an awesome podcast.
Yes.
That is my
blogspot.com.
Hey, shut up. You're not.
I also like Stephen King's kid, Joe Hill, but no one else on the podcast does.
No, a lot of people out there do like little Stevie King Jr., but I read that comic and it looked like the art that belonged in like an Archie comic or Richie Rich, and it just
you
it
mean
wasn't
Walking
scary
Dead?
To me.
It looked like it belonged in Walking Dead.
No, it looked like it was very childlike and very sort of whimsical, and it just didn't fit the subject to me at all. But you know, I know you really like it a lot, and I don't want to crap on something that you like.
So. I do.
Well, we
damn it, Amanda.
We don't do that on this show, so stop.
There'll be time for that later.
Look, we're going to go see him tomorrow. You can spend the whole day telling him how bad Joe Hill is.
And I will.
Wait, which one of you just... I didn't see your mouth move, but I heard you. That was very strange.
And finally, if you're sick of Twilight vampires, I've been reading the 70s Tomb of Dracula comic, and it is so much ridiculous blah Dracula.
Blah!
Blah!
Shit, we didn't even get to comics and books. We're going to have to, maybe next Halloween we'll do this again.
Yeah, so tune in next year, folks.
Hey, we could make this a yearly thing. I don't see why not. All right, folks, unfortunately...
I think that's everything I wanted to hit, yeah.
That is all the time we have for this week. Do appreciate it. Call our voicemail, as always, 206-973-3982. Clusterflong 2 is coming up. Sign up for that if you want us to ask you a question. Check out our other podcast. Check out Amanda's blog. I probably have other things to tell you to do, but I forget. So that's it, and we're going to stop talking now.
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published weekly and is available via iTunes or on the web at sarcasticvoyage.com. Detailed show notes, related links, and alternate file formats are also available on the web. That website, again, is sarcasticvoyage.com. Follow Matt and Al on Twitter. They are, respectively, @RobotMatt and @Algar. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com. An on-air response is guaranteed. All material contained herein is the intellectual property of Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the featured guest, unless otherwise noted. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2010.
And what's not cool about giving you nightmares?